Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Hello, and welcome to What Goes Up, a Bloomberg Weekly Markets podcast. I'm Sarah Poncek, a reporter on the Cross Asset team.
And I'm Mike Regan, a senior editor on the markets team.
This week on the show, it's the calm before the storm, at least if you're referring to next week's Federal Reserve meeting. But in the lead up, roughly 140 companies delivered earnings reports this week. We'll break it all down.
And of course, we'll close out the episode with our tradition, the craziest thing I saw in markets this week. Sarah, I have a crazy thing I saw about both of our guests today. Do you know what it is?
Let's hear it.
Neither one of these guys is on Twitter. I think they're the last two financial market professionals not on Twitter, which I think probably means that they're among the smartest out there.
I admire that. I'm pretty jealous.
Exactly. I didn't know you could not be on Twitter. I'm going to go delete my account tonight.
I know you won't.
But let's introduce these guys to all our Twitter fans out there. First, Sean Snyder, Head of Investment Strategy at Citi Personal Wealth Management.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Also joining us is Bloomberg's stocks team leader, and he's the author of the Taking Stock column. If you don't subscribe to that on the terminal, I highly recommend it. It's a great way to start your day reading about a lot of good color in the equity market. His name is Brad Olson. Brad, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
Sean, let's start with you. What are you talking about with clients these days? I mean, obviously, the stock market's near record highs. Bond yields are low again. Where's the opportunity? What are people interested right now? You know, sort of what is your elevator pitch if you run into a client in the elevator?
I think what most clients want to know is that they hear a lot about potential recession. They also hear record highs, and it's hard for them to kind of take those two views and understand what it means. Mm-hmm. So we try and kind of walk them through that. It's also one of those times where I think it's important to tell people about having a diversified portfolio as opposed to trying to time the market. Anytime the R word comes out, recession, people try and time the market, they get in and out. If you would have got out last December, you would have missed out on the 19% plus gains this year, right? So those are the types of things that we try and talk clients through currently. As far as opportunities, there's a lot of different things out there right now. Maybe U.S. stocks look a little bit expensive, but there are certain areas like healthcare, things that have strong earnings growth, even in a downturn. So there are areas of pockets that you can diversify into. Maybe it's not going to be the stock that makes you rich, but it does help balance your portfolio in these uncertain times.
So it seems like we've been hearing the R word, recession, much less and less, especially less than we heard in the fourth quarter of last year. Sure, we've gotten some nice economic data. However, this week we did get some global PMIs and we saw weakness out of the Eurozone. In the U.S., it hit 50 on the edge of contraction, lowest since 2009. How do you look at the good data and the bad data, especially ahead of the Fed meeting next week, and kind of try to think about what the environment's going to look like going forwards from here?
There's not always a clear picture, right? And you can take the PMIs and discuss, you know, what's a good PMI or a bad PMI. If you look at the manufacturing PMI, you would say that it's bad, right? Manufacturing sector is in a slump. And then you could take the flip side and you could say you look at the services sector and it's holding up just fine. And that gives you this mixed picture. But you should kind of think about how they both interplay together. The manufacturing sector is not encapsulated into its own. If you think of a company like a auto manufacturer, they make a car, right? But there's more to that. You think of the Super Bowl ads related to that car, the fact that that company employs an accounting service. It can eventually bleed into service sector as well. It really hasn't yet. And manufacturing is particularly, you know, worse in Europe right now, more so than the U.S. But those things can bleed over into other economic activity, and that's what you worry about.
Yeah, it's a great point because you often hear, well, services are, what, 70-some percent of the economy.
That's right.
Their consumer, you know, especially. So your thinking is that that manufacturing weakness can actually lead to service sector weakness and sort of be almost a leading indicator, a canary in the coal mine for the entire economy, right?
I'm not worried yet, but I think you have to watch that. And I think that gives the Fed some sort of case to make when it comes to doing an insurance cut.
So let's bring it to what companies are actually saying at the moment. Brad, I know you've had an extremely busy week, the busiest
week, to say the least.
Yeah, of this earnings season. I'm sure you've hardly slept. But if you take a step back and you look at the executive commentary that we have seen so far through this earnings season, is anyone actually worried about an economic downturn?
We're not seeing it yet, at least as far as the numbers are concerned. Just through this week, sales are still surprising to the upside. Earnings are surprising even further. We heard a lot of crowing leading into this earnings season about a potential earnings recession that is yet to materialize. So as far as the executive commentary, we're seeing a lot of idiosyncratic circumstances. I mean, all the way from, you know, the maker of these snowmobiles, Polaris. I don't know if it was, you know, earlier this week they reported and their stock actually rose after citing the tariffs and the trade concerns, just showing that if companies were, you know, strong enough and they definitely navigated the circumstances, they could still be successful. On the other side, on the flip side, we're still seeing some industrial weakness. We saw CSX last week, which is still weighing on some concerns, or the Cass Freight Index is lower. So to that extent, there's no major thematic circumstances that are bleeding through, but so far, so good, I would say. I think the interesting thing that jumped out to me just this past week has been how semiconductors have managed to navigate the Huawei blacklisting, mm-hmm. Utilizing this loophole. Bloomberg wrote about it extensively in the last few weeks by using some of their overseas subsidiaries to basically allow them to still sell through to Huawei despite those trade war concerns. So we're seeing that with the SOX index at the session highs. That was a huge lift to the S&P this week. And, you know, with the S&P at pushing through 3,000, it's hard to make that case.
You know, Sean, getting back to what Brad's talking about, I get the sense that investors aren't really ready right now to abandon the stock market. But it seems like there's a lot of confusion, a lot of uncertainty about where that leadership should be. You know, we saw this real strong rally in defensive stocks that has really made places like utilities look sort of like a crowded trade. I mean, a utility index in the S&P trading at 20 times earnings, I think, for the first time ever, basically. I saw a lot of action in real estate companies. But then you'll have these days where it seems like everyone jumps to the other side of the ship and says, oh, no, everyone's too worried. Let's get back into the cyclical, the growth stocks. You saw the banks rebound. Is that a fair assessment of sort of the mentality right now, that people aren't ready to throw in the towel in the stocks, but there's not really much clarity on what is going to be that leadership?
I think that's true. I think anytime you get to record highs, people are going to be a little bit confused about what to move into, because they all get to be more expensive when you get to record highs. And I think people are confused about whether we are headed towards a recession or not. There are indicators that point towards a recession, right? The inverted yield curve is the most obvious. Everyone talks about it. That points to potential recession in mid-2020, maybe early 2021. There are also some other indicators, too. The number of businesses saying that now's a good time to expand may have peaked back in May of 2018. The initial jobless claims, which is a very, very timely read on the U.S. labor market, might have peaked in the week of April 13th, 2019. So there are some signs that maybe you could have a recession. And that's why I think the Fed sees some of those. They don't mention it specifically, but I think they see some of this stuff and they worry a little bit about it. And that's why I think you see this move back and forth between defensive and cyclicals. If you think the economy's bottoming out and you're going to get a soft landing scenario where trade wars have subsided, the Fed is now easy, that argues for cyclicals. If that doesn't happen, trade concerns come back to the roost, the Fed doesn't cut rates the way we want, it's maybe not 50 basis points or whatever, then you want defensives.
Yeah, that labor market, I think, is so key. I mean, it doesn't mm-hmm. really start to feel like a weak economy until you start seeing non-farm payrolls move down closer to zero. You start to see that unemployment rate tick up. And yet it's very much a not really a leading indicator. It's more of a lagging or coincident indicator. So what is the jobless claims your sort of go to way to sort of figure out the outlook for the labor market? And if so, do you look at a moving average of 4 weeks or 6 weeks or something like that? Or do you look at some of the labor surveys? What's sort of the best way for investors to wrap their head around what to expect for the labor market?
By far the easiest way is the initial jobless claims number. Comes out every Thursday at 8:30 a.m. Now, 1 week's movement is not going to tell you anything.
Right.
But if you continually pay attention to it, it tends to trend higher over time. And it's been doing that a little bit since, like I mentioned, April 2019. Again, super low levels, relatively stable.
Right.
No signs right now that there is a recession. It's one of the things that makes me confident that there's not a recession right now. Mm-hmm. But again, it leads by maybe, say, 12 months. So if it continues to trend higher and higher and higher and higher, and then you get to mid-2020 and all of a sudden initial jobless claims are at 300,000 and you say, oh, maybe we're starting recession. So that's one thing you pay attention to. The labor surveys are also great as well. If you look at the small business surveys by NFIB, they're a great leading indicator.
Yeah. They've cooled off a little bit too, haven't they?
They have. Small business confidence has come down. Now, again, it's still at elevated levels, but you know, that's what happens when you have a peak, right? And before the recession, right, it starts to decline. So it may be the beginning of that decline. It doesn't mean that we're there. It doesn't mean we are at a recession. It's just like those initial jobless claims maybe bottoming out in April doesn't mean we're at a recession. But those may be signs that you're headed towards a recession.
And I will add that initial jobless claims did fall this Thursday. Sure, it's just 1 week, but that does underpin that the case that we have a pretty strong labor market. I want to come back to the earnings season as a whole, Sean, because if you look at a benchmark level, sure, companies are beating, the majority are, but they pretty much always do because they come in with low expectations. But if you look further out, if you look at the third quarter and the fourth quarter, we're now starting to see those estimates come down, also full year 19 estimates and also next year's estimates as well. Can the market continue to trend higher if we continue to see this, at least at this point, slight deterioration in earnings estimates for the rest of the year and for the 2 years ahead?
It's a bit of a tricky question. I guess it's my job to answer that.
Sorry, Sean.
I think the answer is they can go higher just based on the idea of all the stimulus coming into the market. Mm-hmm. It's not just the Fed cutting rates, but you're getting some monetary stimulus through that avenue, through a rate cut, which is almost guaranteed to happen next Wednesday. But you're also seeing increased fiscal spending by the government. Right. So that the new budget deal, if it passes, I think contributes maybe, and you'd have to fact check me on this. Please don't quote it as an exact thing. But I think it's about $44 billion of increased federal spending next year. Those types of things can enter the market and increase asset prices. And the one thing you might see from the Fed cutting rates is not necessarily a boost to the economy, but you might see a boost to risk assets, which is essentially what we've seen since 2009, right? The stock market has done better than the economy in general. I mean, now we're getting to the point where maybe the economy is as strong as the stock market. But
right. And from what I've read, Citi's sort of house view is that you're expecting a quarter point cut next week at the end of July when the Fed meets. Everyone is using the catchphrase insurance cut, you know, meaning this might be one and done, maybe two cuts. What's your thinking on that? I mean, is the market going to sort of have a temper tantrum almost for, you know, more than that, for a continued easing cycle? Or will one cut satisfy people, do you think, or two cuts, say?
I think two cuts would probably satisfy the market. I think they might even be looking deeper than that. But I think our expectations, July and September, you know, I think you call it an insurance cut. And the idea of insurance is a great thing. We all have it. But sometimes you get in an accident. And the fact that you have insurance doesn't negate the fact that you got in a horrible accident that changed your life.
Right.
I think the Fed is somewhat the same way. I think there has been historical examples where they did an insurance cut and we had a soft landing and we moved on and we avoided a recession and things were fine. Right, exactly. But in 2001, 2007, we didn't avoid the accident and fell into a recession anyways. And that's the type of scenario we are clearly hoping to avoid. And I think that's also adding to the confusion that you're talking about, people moving in between defenses and cyclicals and that kind of stuff. What really matters is what happens from here on out after the Fed cuts. Do the data continue to deteriorate or do they stabilize and start to pick up a little bit?
Brad, I want to come back to you because not only does your team look at every single company that reports earnings, you guys also read every single street note that comes out, essentially. And I want to get your sense, when you look in aggregate at the Wall Street strategist notes that are coming out, Do they get the sense that the markets are getting fatigued at these levels? And is an insurance cut, if we want to call it that at this point in time, enough to help ease any fatigue that may be settling in?
Well, I think it's absolutely paramount that a cut occurs. Just from what I'm reading, I think there's an interesting, some interesting research that I read out of Credit Suisse actually is taking this to the devil's advocate view, where they've actually said every time the rates actually fall, the 10-year, for example, mm-hmm. I think in the, as long as yields fall, shares actually aren't responding in kind. They actually, there is no one-to-one corollary there, which I thought was an interesting view. I mean, the market needs the cut. It has to have the cut to continue to move any higher, as Sean indicated. But at the same time, there is some research to show, at least on the short-term basis, it's not always as cut and dry as it seems.
And, you know, with the S&P at around 3,000, that's either at or above a lot of the street's forecasts.
Yeah.
I mean, are we, any idea, and Sean, maybe you have ideas on this, are we going to start seeing that those forecasts go up, get them in before the end of the year, I guess? Or, you know, I know, Sean, you don't have to, you're not responsible for an official forecast, but would you, you know, if you were, would you be itching to move it up right now, or would you be holding firm?
What's interesting is our S&P 500 target for year end this year, and I don't set that, it's set by our chief U.S. equity strategist, yeah. Tobias Lefkovich, is 2850.
Yeah.
So we're below that. So you could argue that it should be raised. But at the same time, you mentioned this potential earnings reset where earnings for 2020 are potentially too high. Consensus is looking for 10% earnings growth next year. We're looking for 5%. So we think eventually the market kind of realizes that and it kind of comes back down to where we are. That's our view for now. That said, we did start the year with a target of 3,100.
Oh, right. It's already
and lowered it after November, December timeframe when markets sold off. So right. To get to 3,100 is clearly not out of the realm of possibility, right. Given we thought that back in January.
Yeah, 2,800 looked kind of, 2,850 looked kind of bullish.
It looked very aggressive when they put it out.
And we've made it there a little bit over halfway through the year.
And I think there are only a couple more strategists. I think maybe three strategists or so that still have targets above where we are, but it's not that, we're very close to the top.
I don't think people expected the Fed to pivot like this.
Right.
That is why their targets are too low.
Right.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
No one seemed like they were ready for the Fed to pivot as they did. Something that people were coming into maybe a little bit more prepared for this week was we also heard from the European Central Bank. We heard from Mario Draghi, and a lot of people actually thought that they could potentially cut rates this week. That didn't happen. They very much set up the case for September, also the restart of QE, also their tiering system. But it seems like it still didn't live up to the expectations. Why not, Sean?
I think they didn't outline the details the way some were hoping for. And then I think primarily the fact that he said, Draghi in particular said, that the odds of a recession in that region are still low. And I think that set the expectation that maybe expectations for what might come in September is too high. And I think that is also kind of playing through to people's expectations for the Federal Reserve, thinking that maybe we were going to get a 50 basis point cut next week. But if Mario Draghi's not that concerned about Europe, which is looking worse than here, mm-hmm. then maybe the Fed's not as concerned as they were hoping for. Which sounds bad, right? You should be hoping for a bad situation, but the markets are different than
upside down
normal
world
people.
Again.
Before we get to the craziest thing that we all saw in markets this week, Brad, I want to put the spotlight on you. If you looked back at earnings season so far, what would you say have been the big standouts, whether that means a good standout or a pretty bad standout?
Boeing jumps out to me. Yeah. It's still a story. We thought it was going to pass for a while, and then there was that surprise charge. that we saw that they came out with right ahead of their earnings, which led analysts to scramble to adjust their estimates. When the earnings came out, there was a little bit of indecision, you know, from investors alike. You know, were we expecting this? Were we not expecting this? The estimates hadn't caught up yet. I think even with some of the airlines' results and some of the, I guess, provisions that American Airlines has made and Southwest, which is the largest user, I believe, of the 737 MAX, you know, we're seeing some various impacts there. I think American Airlines is on the downside of that. I think Southwest has actually recovered. They're making the special provisions to account for some of the 737 MAX grounding. That's still a big story, huge impact there. That's, you know, we thought that was going to kind of subside. I think another interesting story was 3M. You know, mm-hmm. they're one of the largest losses in investor capital in that name in 30 some odd years last wow. quarter. And, you know, results on Thursday actually assuaged some of those concerns. But nevertheless, you know, shares still came under pressure. So there's a lot still for, you know, 3M makes everything in the economy, right? So if we're talking about the recessionary outlook, they have their finger on the pulse of just about everything from Post-its to the automotive market to healthcare.
Quite diverse.
Yeah.
Does that mean we can get to the craziest thing I saw on markets?
I think it does. You were away last week, and I know you missed it. So
I know. What was the craziest thing last week? Did you anoint a winner?
We didn't anoint a winner.
That leaves the road wide open for you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Sean, did they tell you about our gimmick here?
I didn't know you could win.
Sometimes we have
whole
a winner.
New story.
Sometimes everyone's a winner. Everyone gets a participation trophy.
Excellent.
Right, that's right. Sarah's a millennial after all.
So yeah, it's true.
All right, let's start with you, Sarah. What do you got?
So, full disclaimer, not for the vegetarians or vegans out there possibly, but I thought this was pretty crazy. Supposedly, because it has been so hot over the past couple of weeks, or really just unseasonably hot, pigs across the country have been getting skinnier and skinnier, which means that if you look at hog prices, they've actually been rising. Really weird to see a headline like that cross the Bloomberg terminal or across the website on the Bloomberg, but still something I hadn't thought of, and I thought that was pretty crazy.
That's the most alarming thing.
Yeah,
I've
it's
heard
really
in,
alarming.
In markets this week.
Extra time in the mud.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
All right, Brad, that's tough to top. What do you got?
Yeah, that is challenging. I don't usually follow the hog market. so that's a little outside my lane. I guess to me the big story was Align Technology today. You know, given my position here in the markets team, we're looking for big moves in the market and where shares are moving. And Align Technology lost about a third of its market cap.
You could say that's a big
move. That's a big move.
it's a big move, and it's a big company. I mean, yeah. I think they were worth about $20 billion setting into results. They're the maker of these, you know, the invisible braces
right.
that you see so heavily advertised. I think you could say the writing was on the wall. You know, you're seeing some of these retail locations open up, the Smile Direct Club, heavy competition in that space. I'm not going to say I was necessarily a client, but it was definitely surprising. I know it's worked for many, many other people.
Subtext.
And, right. So, you know, I think there are a lot of underlying issues there. Competition, I think they're embroiled in a lawsuit as well. But I thought that was the leader in the space taking a huge hit out of nowhere. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
And that's kind of been a sort of a sub theme of this earnings season, hasn't it? Been that really big moves one direction or the other, especially big moves.
And I guess that's what that's what happens when we're at the highs, right? You're always going to get some of these huge downdrafts that kind of take a lot of people by surprise. So you could argue that's not a surprise, but this was still a surprise to me anyway.
That's pretty good. All right, Sean, we've got invisible braces and skinny hogs.
I may have two craziest things,
I'll
start with one that ties in with Sarah. There is a certain vegetarian meatless burger maker.
Wonder which one you're talking about.
I can't mention specific stock names,
Beyond.
But you may be able to. I cannot mention the names.
I'm making that up.
That crossed $200 a share this week, which is a 700% plus return from its IPO in May, which to me is absolutely crazy. And I do not believe that there is a plant-based substitute for bacon. So it is extremely crazy to me. The other thing I think is crazy is something I believe I saw on Bloomberg Television this week, may have happened a little bit last week, but it is going around on Wall Street this week, was a Wall Street kind of analyst or veteran saying that the 10-year Treasury yield could go to zero in the next couple of years.
Right. I remember that one. Yeah.
And I've gotten a lot of questions about that. And I think that is a very interesting thing to think about, because if you would have told me back in 2013 that a German Bund could go to negative 0.37% or whatever it's today, I would have said no.
You'd say when skinny pigs fly, right?
Right, exactly. But now here we are talking about it happening in the United States.
I, too, have two crazy things. The first one...
That wasn't part of the rules.
Mike has to make up for it.
That's right. I'll make it up for last week. One being that we now have Greek 10-year yields, if not lower, pretty close to Treasury yields. I'm not going to make that my official crazy thing, because then every currency guy on Twitter will point out that you got to adjust for the currency.
That's why you got to get rid of Twitter.
Right, exactly. That's why I'm deleting it tonight. But my official craziest thing this week is, I'm sure we're all familiar, there's very handful of sort of legendary investors out there. I think we'd all agree Bill Miller is one of them. Beat the S&P 500 for like 15 years straight, running a very plain vanilla mutual fund. Big one, though, the Legg Mason Value Fund, considered one of the most famous value investors in the world. This hedge fund he's running now is a different animal. It rose 46% in the first half of the year, and they're attributing it to, for one thing, Bitcoin, and the other thing, Amazon. So here, one of the world's most famous
value investor
is loading up on Amazon, which I found to be kind of crazy, and Bitcoin. And he also, this is a fund that can be as much as triple levered. So you can't say that Bill Miller is going quietly into the sunset as he ages. He's going big, levering up.
Going big.
Triple levered, potentially triple levered Bitcoin and high-flying tech stock funds. So I think, Sean, maybe this is a good example of how the notion of what value investing is really changing dramatically, I would say. Is Amazon a value stock? I know you can't... Talk single names.
No comment.
That's fair. But before we go, I have to read our favorite Twitter comment as well.
This one's pretty good.
Yeah. So we had Jeff Hancock write in. He is at experts with two S's, 97_Jeff. And then he said, Ford came out with an all-electric F-150 and the stock declined. Brad, I have to come to you. Is it just the fact that earnings were not very great and maybe overshadowed this?
Yeah, I think the F-150 is the main driver of that stock. If you looked at deliveries over the past, decade or so, the F-150 is always where, your eyes first glance, are deliveries up? I wouldn't say that's the reason why the stock is down. So I'm gonna go out on a limb there and say that. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, they actually beat on sales. I think it was just their earnings and other things. I think
also, full year outlook was a little disappointing.
The interesting one was Nissan. Profit was down 99% year over year, which I thought was, as far as the automakers went,
bunch of layoffs too, right?
Yeah.
Japan. Although I will say, Sarah, if I were to make a Venn diagram of electric car drivers, Tesla types, and Ford F-150 drivers, I don't think I'd see a lot of overlap in those two circles. They'd be several inches apart.
Maybe not necessarily. So
maybe our Twitter guy's onto something there.
Yeah, maybe so. But with that said, Brad, Sean, thank you both so much for joining the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
What Goes Up will be back next week. Until then, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal, website, and app, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love it if you took the time to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts so more listeners can find us. And you can find us on Twitter. Follow me at Sarah Ponsek, and Mike is at Reganonymous. You can also follow Blooper Podcasts at Podcasts. What Goes Up is produced by Topher Forges. The head of Blooper Podcasts is Francesca Levy. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Hi. I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.